Yes, Prabhu, Nityananda Das, Prabhu.
Yes, Maharaj. The question from Priyananda, Didi. Yes. So the question is, Fyodor Konyuhov, a famous Russian survivalist and traveler, became a priest. His travels strengthen his faith in the Lord. Does Maya actually aims at deluding everyone or at taking each person to the Lord in his own way?
Maya?
Maya.
Sometimes we hear with regard to Maya Devi, that she is ashamed to show herself before the Lord on this account of deluding souls. But what is at the basis of that delusion really is self-deception. Otherwise, we would have to continue. There are just these pure, sincere souls, and Maya, for no good reason, is just deluding them and turning them against Krishna and away from their Lord, and suddenly you're in the Judeo-Christian side of things, as if evil or Satan has some independent existence. But more tenable is that the Department of Correction, the Department of Delusion, is also one of the departments of the government of the Lord. Just as in this world, the penal institutions, they don't operate independently of the government. It's a government department. And actually, you know, the warden, the head of the jail, they're doing a service. It may not appear that way. We say, no, they're punishing all these prisoners. It's a terrible thing they're doing. But we're told actually that it comes under the heading of rehabilitation, to bring them back to the point where they can be a free citizen in the free world, and moving freely, but in line with the, well, we can say antaranga shakti. We're going to talk about bahiranga shakti, antaranga shakti, jiva shakti, situated between really atomic particles of chit shakti, but on the outskirts of the chit shakti potency, and tempted to reign in hell, in the words of Milton. The satanic mania, what is that? When you're presented with a choice, serve in heaven or reign in hell. And in that regard, Guru Maharaj, you said, he's noted for his use of analogy, quotes Gandhi regarding Indian independence, and when the Britain, England was, the UK was still in charge of India, because Gurudev would sometimes joke that he was also an Englishman, an English citizen, because he was born 1929, and they didn't get independence till 1947, so. He also said he was half Chinese. He said that. Some distant relatives or his, anything is possible in the Krishna consciousness movement. The movement of Krishna consciousness. But so he gave the example, Guru Maharaj, that when Gandhi is arguing in favor of independence, India becoming independent from England, I'll just say England, or, you know, may not be entirely accurate. And they would say, you're not fit for self-rule. Like a sort of patronizing, you know, we would give it to you, but you know, you don't know what to do with it. You're not fit for self-rule. In time, you may become, but not now. With the implication, in other words, if we give you this type of freedom, you could do the wrong thing. You may not make the right choices. So we give you this freedom and you do what is wrong. And Guru Maharaj said, Gandhi said to that, freedom means the right to do wrong. Right? Normally, when people are talking about freedom, they cast it in a more positive light. You know, why do we want to be free? To do good things, like the teenager arguing with their parents. No, the reason I want to be free is not to do anything wrong, but just to do good things. You know? And somehow the parents are skeptical that will be the end result of unadulterated freedom or free choice prematurely. So it's considered patronizing to say to a country, and particularly an ancient country, a civilization that's been going on, by all accounts, you know, 5,000, 10,000 and years beyond. And if you want to get into Veda, that's another thing. But just on this side of things, for thousands of year-old civilizations, saying you're not fit for self-rule. He said, freedom means the right to do wrong. So sometimes the question comes, I mean, well, if God really loves us, if Krishna really loves us, why did he allow this to happen? The mess we're in at present. To remove that possibility is to remove free will. And it's free, and free will here implies consciousness. A conscious living being has choice. Right? And we can say, well, what about the animals? They don't appear to have so much choice. They're ruled mainly by instinct. From a Vedic perspective, we say, that's due to the abuse of free will that you descend into lower species. Right? And to the degree of the abuse is the restriction on the freedom of movement. So we say, you know, in the most extreme case would be like a tree, right? What is it called? Stavra, jungamam, and Ramananda Sambhad. And it's interesting that we think, oh, the abuse of freedom, we'll think in terms of maybe sinful activities or sense enjoyment, you know, being a libertine, unrestricted. But actually, I mean, that sort of speaks for itself. But in this regard, Ramananda and Mahaprabhu are talking about what is the fate of, like, how do you say? Not Brahmavadins, but more like Mayavadins, those who deny the personality of Godhead. This would be the grossest misuse of freedom, not to just be a sense enjoyer. So Bhaktivinod Thakur, in one of his songs, he's saying, if you had to make a choice between a Vishayi, you know, a libertine sense enjoyer, and a Mayavani, you'll associate with the Vishayi, because they have some hope of coming in connection with a nirguna agent and transitioning from that life toward a life of devotion. Whereas the Mayavadi, not Mayavadi Aparadi, right? And it's given in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, Ahruhi Krishchena Param Padam Tatat Patanti Adho Anadrita Jasmarangraya. These so-called advanced spiritual personalities, they go so high, even maybe leave the gravitational pull of the mundane universe, but anadrita, adrita means to worship, anadrita means, but because they do not worship the lotus feet of Krishna. And what is the implication? It means they're envious of that position. Sometimes Guru Maharaj would say, they can give up everything, right? Sometimes we've seen in India, they're not wearing any clothes, right? They've given up every material thing, you see, but they can't give up the notion that I'm God. So all this external show of not even wearing a cloth and they're going naked in the winter and all this, but in the heart, they want to occupy the seat, the throne of divinity. So that is a more egregious offense than just uncontrolled, unrestricted sense enjoyment. So in the Jiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur deals with many questions that might arise naturally in considering these things. And one of the things that he says is that he gives the example of gold and how you purify gold. And we've seen this in India at the Lucky Narayan Babu Goldsmith. They always have a name like that, Lakshmi Narayan. And what do? You present the piece of gold, and to see what degree it's gold. They, in those days, they had it looked like a Bunsen burner, but not, just some sort of a wick, a lamp with a wick on. And they put the gold in and they burn it and it turns black. And then they wipe away the soot. And that's where the touchstone, sparsha money is another thing, is like philosopher's stone from a Western point of view. But touchstone in the Western point of view, we speak of sparsha money and just say as a footnote, mean the transformative power of the association of the Vaishnava. It's another wonderful, beautiful thing. In the West, the touchstone is you take that gold, you touch it against the stone. It's like they make a mark. And then they examine that and determine it's 24, 22, 20, 18, 14, 12, etc. But that process is to put the gold in the fire, becomes covered in soot, black momentarily, and then wipe the soot away, and what you're left with is pure gold. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, the sufferings of the jiva in the material world are like that fire. And if that brings them, although momentarily they're covered, in the soot of karmic action, reaction, suffering, if it ultimately brings them to the platform of purity, where the golden self comes out, is it objectionable? Should we object to that? Although locally, immediately, we'll find it objectionable. No one's volunteering to suffer, unless, of course, they're spiritually progressive. Right? What is tapasya? But, in Prabhupada's words, voluntarily inconveniencing oneself for the sake of spiritual realization and progress. So actually, that is the target of tapasya, to voluntarily inconvenience herself. As Janardhan Maharaj likes to tell when in Prabhupada's final days when he's giving a lecture, like a Pandal program somewhere, I think he was even laying down on the stage. He had no, or was losing his vitality and energy, but still preaching. And came to this subject of yoga and all the physicality and the discipline and to a degree suffering that's required to do this practice. And Prabhupada was saying, why don't you put the same energy and undergo the same suffering for something that's actually permanently beneficial? You know, he's going to give all this energy and effort and suffer as well, then do it for this. Right? Like when Guru Maharaj said that story, that when people are saying about what's required to pursue Krishna consciousness on a daily basis and lifelong pursuit, and people will sometimes vent their, say, disappointment at their lack of progress or something. And one of Guru Maharaj's answers to this question is, he's saying, people want happiness in the world and pleasure and happiness, and everything they do doesn't produce that or get that. That's not an argument against the pursuit of happiness. We're hardwired to seek anandam. Anandamayobhyasat, because who, you know, our ideal is anandam personified, actually. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying that suffering, from an overview, has its value, just as in the penal institution, they're trying to rehabilitate the prisoners. And I used to live in a part of San Francisco where the fire chief had his residence. It was like a firehouse, but a residence somehow, something like that. Maybe he'd been there since the 19th century. And everything was very shiny. This is what the firemen, you know, they're always buffing the brass things they have. And there was one plaque that was also very shiny. And it had chiseled on it a poem or some lines from a poem. And remember, they're firemen, so this is apt. And the poem, the line said, by fire shall hearts be proven, lest virtue's gold grow dim. Understand? I know poetry is difficult to translate into another language. But remember, they're firemen. They're basically saying, we need fire. Fire is the test of what sort of virtues here it says, let's virtue's gold grow dim. By fire shall heart, that'll prove what the heart's got when it's put under this fire. So it's all a question of perspective. From the most external view, these things are objectionable, right? Or meant to lead us to a particular type of thinking. Again, Srila Prabhupada, he says in one of his purports in the Bhagavad Gita, when one realizes that materialistic existence is a constant source of perplexity at every step, it behooves such a person to approach a spiritual master. So again, then they have their part to play. The opposition has its part to play. That which is opposed has its part to play in drawing contrast toward what is real, substantial, true, worth pursuing. But I like to add, and like as a just a little comment to what Prabhupada said, like when one realizes that, you know, material existence is a constant source of perplexity And I like to put this like in brackets. And a never-ending series of humiliations. A never-ending series of humiliations. From the time you're born till the time you die. Because in old age, the people suffer a loss of dignity and that they go back to almost a childlike state of helplessness and dependence upon others, which may be charming somewhat in the child, the babies, not so for the elderly. It's humiliation, the loss of dignity, etc., the inevitability of dealing with mortality. Where my mother's staying, and she's going on 98, I saw this one man in the hallway, and I said, you know, how are you, sir? And he said, well done. He goes, I'm almost 100. He said, well done. I said, oh, I hope I have a sense of humor like you if I ever make it that far. So this point that but still, Maya, she may feel some shame or reticence that of doing this particular type of seva. Just as we hear Mahadev Shiva. On one hand, we're told Mayavadi Bhasya Sunile Hoy Sarvanash, Mahaprabhu saying. You hear Mayavadi philosophy, interpretation, everything is ruined. But who is its most powerful proponent? And give so many argument is Hare Krishna, Jai Sri Pad Bhakti Swami Dandi Maharaj, Shankaracharya, who we know is Shiva, Mayavada, Asach Chastram Prachanam Bodhamuchite, Mayeva Kapitam Devi Tadi, Kalo Brahmana Rupina. Saying, in the Kali Yuga, I take the form of this Brahman, Shankaracharya, what were you told? When he's like, how old was he? 6, 7, when he took sannyas? Talking about being intense. He takes sannyas when he's around 7. He writes his comment, the famous Sharirarka Bhashya, commentary on Vedanta Sutra, when he's 12. Later, some Rani, some queen, wanted to have a discussion with him about like conjugal pastimes. He had no idea what she was talking about. He couldn't even participate in the discussion. They had no reference point. So we're told he entered the body, a king was dying, he entered that body and then came back and said, now I can, you know, discuss. And interestingly, the Maya, Moha Mudgara Stotram, the hammer for breaking illusion, where he said to his disciples, we've heard this is so great, this illusion, maybe I won't come out. You know, there's some risk involved in this experiment. So if he's lying there in his body in a comatose-like state and then entering the other, and he's saying, if after some time I don't come out, then chant this stotram in my ear. Gurudev liked this one sloka in particular. Just remember, it becomes Dina Jamino, etc. It's similar to the Bhagavatam sloka, saying, every day the sun is rising and setting, and our life duration is decreasing. And when are we going to interpret the events of the world in such a way as to take spiritual life seriously and progress? That's what it comes to. So then it's good if you have these wayward souls And they need to be tested in varieties and various ways to bring out their better angels, so to speak. Right? Then it's a service, although ostensibly not a very desirable service. But it would require some special devotees. So also Shankaracharya, Guru Maharaj will say, Shiva, he's saying, because even his disciples bring him in collision, clash with Krishna. So with regard to the Shankaracharya incarnation, he's saying, why do I have to do this? This is so horrible to poison the souls, the minds and of these souls with the worst thing imaginable, Mayavad, where they will think that they are God. The end result being they will think they are God. Soham, I'm that. And incidentally, Guru Maharaj said, Shankara, he says, there's so much in the Veda, the Mahabharata, the Puranas. I'm now going to express everything in half a sloka. Right. Brahma Satya Jagan Mitya. Brahma is truth, Jagat, all this world, Mitya is false. So Guru Maharaj says a little humorously, what you're referring to, what is that? You're saying this Jagat is false. You're making a reference to something. And to whom are you preaching? Who are you talking to? If all this is false, and all this individual identity is false. I said this one Chinese man was visiting, and not here, but in Navadvip, and we're having a discussion, and his wife was a dentist in Taiwan, and we're having a similar discussion like that. So at one point I said to him, he said, who are you talking to? And he looked at me and went like, like, yeah, I'm just projecting you. And I said, does your wife know that? That she's just a mental projection? But so Guru Maharaj said, who have you come to preach to? And what are you referring to when you say, this is illusion? There should be no this to refer to. Still, it's necessary, this sort of testing, examination, you can say. So, to reign in hell, the right to do wrong. Freedom means the right to do wrong. And what was the question originally about Maya?
Does Maya actually aims at deluding everyone or at taking each person to the Lord in his own way?
Yeah, we can say both in the sense that to test them and in the process ultimately free them. Just like a teacher who's testing students, it's not actually to make them fail, but it's to promote them. But in the event of failure, it's to draw their attention to that thing that they need to, the specific area they need to focus on to improve. Now, the student might misinterpret this as, the teacher as being malevolent against them. But actually, the teacher wants to promote them. So it's not that Maya wants to make people forgetful of Krishna or delude them. but ultimately to bring them to, what's the word, like expurgate or purge? Purge these unwanted tendencies, delusions. So long at last they will surrender. But sometimes Guru Maharaj would reference in the Brihad Bhagavatamritam, Sanatana Goswami, when a soul is trying to, he's gone through the eight layers of the material universes, all the different planets, is about to be liberated from material existence. And he said, the last sweet bullet enters the brain, where Maya appears before him. This is the ultimate test. She appears before him in a very, you know, seductive form and says, you know, why are you leaving? And the jiva says, why? Because, you know, I suffered so much in this world, and now I finally come to my senses and my intelligence, and I understand, you know, the way to proceed. And she thinks, yes, but that was because you were deluded by me. You were my slave. But now I'm offering to become your slave. And the jiva is going like, really? And then, you'll be Shiva and I'll be your Shakti. Guru Maharaj is saying that the jiva souls are wannabe Shivas. And we are in the beginning, but Brahma Sangita, the glance of Mahavishnu toward Maya. And just see how he cannot have any direct contact. So in yoga nidra, half asleep, peripheral glance, and the glance is personified as Shambhu, who's the sum total of all the jivas. All the jivas are within Shambhu, and then they're impregnated into the womb of material energy, and all their different forms are supplied. So Shiva wannabes, because we know there's Bhogshiv, Tyagshiv, Bhaktashiv, so it means master of Maya. I want to be the master of Maya. So she's offering that last chance offer on the verge of becoming liberated from material existence. You'll be Shiva and I'll be your Shakti. So as Guru Maharaj, and we're telling with regard to Nityananda, even Nityananda Prabhu, the famous verse that says, Ekala Ishwara Krishna Arsa Britya, is in the Nityananda Mahima chapter of Chaitanya Charitamritam. So just consider that. Balaram, Nityananda, the first other than Krishna, right? Who's as much Krishna as you could be Krishna without being Krishna, in terms of form. And he's in the mood of being a servant of Krishna. Ekala Ishwara Krishna, Ar Sabritya. It's in the Baladev chapter saying everyone else is a servant. He considers himself a servant. And Chaitanya Das. Same with Advaita Acharya, Mahavishnu. He's in the mood of a servitor. Sanatana Goswami says of Balaram Nityananda that we hear in the Bhagavatam that when Krishna is doing the Mathura Dwarka pastimes, at one point Balaram returns to Vrindavan and he has Rasa Leela with a certain group of gopis in Vrindavan. And Guru Maharaj says, Sanatana Goswami says, and it's an offering to Krishna from within his heart. It's beyond what we can conceive. that he can do the seva of Rasa Lila. It's an offering from within his heart to Krishna. So the point being, Guru Maharaj is saying that our position, and described in scientific terms of positive and negative, saying negative can attract, not assert. Any sort of assertion that it means, as in a term, pratishta, means self-assertion, self-establishment. That is against the intrinsic nature of a jiva soul. Our capacity is for attraction, which means negative development. To the degree that we're developed in negativity, which is synonymous in this context with humility, that can draw the attention of the supreme positive. Look, even Narayan of Vaikuntha cannot compete with Krishna. Right? As Gurudev said, just using one very simple verse, Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahma Sevyamanam. He said in Vaikuntha, one Lakshmi for one Narayan. This is spiritual math. One Lakshmi for one Narayan. What's Goloka? Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahma Sevyamanam. Hundreds and thousands, millions, in some cases billions, trillions of Lakshmis for one Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any other question? And we see in the case of Bilva Mangal Thakur comes to mind that he's in his former life, and we don't ever want to think offensively of Bilva Mangal Thakur. This is Leela pastimes for the benefit of the fallen souls. But we're told he was so attached and addicted to this prostitute whose name was Chintamani, that during the funeral ceremony of his father, his mind became agitated. He couldn't make it through the funeral ceremony. So he leaves in the middle of the funeral ceremony to visit her. And on the way, it begins raining, like monsoon rain, and the bridge is washed out. He comes to a river, and he jumps in the river to cross, and he's like swimming across. He almost drowns. He holds on to something to float to the other side. It turns out it's a corpse. So he's grabbing, embracing a dead body to float to the other side, gets to the other side, sees what he's done. Then he's running towards her house. The gates close. It's still thundering, lightning, raining. So he can't get through the door. He climbs the wall, using one vine to climb the wall. It turns out it's a python. Then he finally makes it there and comes, knocks on the door, and Chintamani opens the door and sees him, and he's a mess from all of this. And she says, if you had an ounce of that type of dedication for Krishna, you would be a great devotee. And what are we told? These words, they, like a thunderbolt, it strikes his heart. And he has some awakening, some realization, and realizes the absurdity of the situation and his own foolishness, and slavery to the senses and his takes up the spiritual path in earnest. But then we're told traveling as a like mendicant, he comes to some, the house of a Brahmin. They offer him something and lodging for the evening. And he's again agitated by the wife of the Brahmin. And then and the Brahmin's like, is there anything, before we retire, is there anything else I can offer you? He's saying, your wife. And this is Vedic culture to the extreme. And, you know, man tells his wife, prepare yourself to receive him. And she goes to the room of Bilba Mangal Thakur, and he says, remove your hairpin. And she takes her hairpin, then her hair comes down, revealing her beauty. And he takes the hairpin and plucks out his eyes. And he's thinking, if my senses are only going to drag me down repeatedly, then it would be better. If my eyes, if that's the end result, then better not to have them. I mean, this is the pastime of Bilba Mangal Thakur. And he's there, you know, writing Krishna Karanamrita. Now he's, because Gurudev once said to me, he said, there was a man, he took sannyas. He gave up his sannyas. He took sannyas again. He's written a book. Do we want to read that book? He said, the book is Krishna Karanamritam. So that Bilba Mangal Thakur, and that book is favorite to Mahaprabhu. When he goes on his tour, like we just read about the sannyas of Mahaprabhu, goes on his tour of South India, he comes to a place, one place he gets Brahma Sangita, another place he gets the Krishna Karanamritam, copies them and then shares them with his intimate devotees. Everything is there. And Krishna Karanamritam in the Gambhir, his what is Banhigarbha, Guru Maharaj says in the Premadama Stotram, and Gurudev renders it as the fire bed of separation, what's going on in the Gambhira. One of his favorite things to read is Krishna Karanamritam. Gita Govinda, Jagannath Balabha Natak, Krishna Karanamritam, and Vidyapati Chandidas. Did I say Jagannath Balabha Natak? So, how is that possible? Mahaprabhu is reading the Krishna. This is so beautiful and encouraging. But that Bilba Mangal Thakur, and his blindness, I told one little boy used to act as his guide. So he just holds the hand of the little boy, and the little boy takes him different places and meets his necessities, everything. And one day when they're walking, the little boy pulls his hand away from him. So he's totally helpless, right, because he's blind. And Bilba Mangal's response to that, he said, you may be able to remove my hand from your hand from my hand, but you will never be able to remove your lotus feet from my heart. Then we can understand that boy is Krishna who takes him everywhere. So, inevitably, Prabhupada says in the light of the Bhagavad, when you look at the sky and there's a clouded portion of the sky and an unclouded portion of the sky, you can distinguish, Oh, there's the clouded section and the unclouded section. So, but when the clouds are removed from the sky, you cannot distinguish between that part of the sky which was once clouded and the part of the sky which was never clouded. And this is an example he's giving with regard to siddha. When someone is nitya buddha, clouded by illusion, you can distinguish. Here's a nitya siddha, nitya buddha. Here's a conditioned soul, here's an unconditioned soul. But when the clouds of illusion are removed, then you can no longer distinguish in that way. Unless you're Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. No, and I just say that because he can say that this group of gopis come from this and these are that, and that is Vishwanath. That's why he's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. But what I mean to say is not in a discriminatory sense. You understand, that can't be. And therefore, it's a very beautiful thing. So, if Maya had a part to play in bringing someone, ultimately, to the siddha position, is it a bad thing? Or a good thing? Yes. Yes, you may.
Maharaj, in Vilvamangala Thakur, Krishna is as his guide, and he knows it is Krishna guiding him. Is it kind of, he knows it's Krishna and still he's using Krishna as a guide?
He may know sometimes and may not know other times. I don't know more details of that. But, see, inevitably, a devotee will recognize who's been with them all along. Just like when someone comes in connection with Krishna consciousness, they have a tendency, upon reflection, after some time, they can see certain events in their life, maybe just prior to the connection, and how they can trace some sort of divine movement there. And then we see, as someone remains within Krishna consciousness, pursuing Krishna consciousness for many years, the range of observation of divine influence starts to expand, so that at a particular point, we can, by this sort of analysis, we can understand that someone can legitimately, who is, and it's awkward to speak about these things, but Bhaktivinoda deals with that in Jivadharma too, but just for the sake of expressing this, so someone is a conditioned soul, but they come in connection with Krishna consciousness by the grace of Guru and Vaishnava, then the range of their vision of observing divine influence in their lives starts expanding. They can come to the point of honestly saying in a heartfelt way, I do not remember a time when I was ever forgetful of Krishna. Because actually, there's only Krishna. Where Shankaracharya is half right, it's an illusion to see things other than Krishna or not in relation to Krishna. That's the difficulty. Where they're told, what is the nature of the Mahabhagavata? Their vision is such, wherever they cast their glance, it's as if the Lord is manifesting there. So they don't see anything not in relation to Krishna or non-Krishna. Everything is Krishna and part of Krishna. It's only in a state of illusion or forgetfulness that one can see otherwise. So as they transition towards remembrance, then we can understand the stage may come where there's no recollection of forgetfulness. Does that make any sense? It would have to be hopeful. In other words, it's awkward to speak about this. And what does Bhaktivinoda say about these things? In a similar way, he's saying, when you give examples, you say milk is like water, and you're saying, so you get the idea, they're both liquid, and you're going, he said, but if you like hold that thought and start analyzing it, you'll realize all the ways that milk is not like water. And then you'll miss the point of the example. So Guru Maharaj will say, if someone doubts what the validity of what I'm saying, for example, he said, when someone re-enters the spiritual world, all right, everything is known to them, everything is known, just as when a person awakens from a dream. When you're in a dream, and you're in another circumstance, and it's very complicated. There are so many things going on. But when you wake from that dream, that's all gone and forgotten. And not only that, you can like, oh, I'm late. You know, you have things, you know, places to go, people to meet, things to do. So he's saying the spiritual, in the awakening into the spiritual world is like that. And he said, and the others may say, you were absent for some time. Anyway, this is what's happening. They know you, you know, everything is known. It's not a gradual, you know, like, it's all manifested as if one had been in some sort of a dream. And just like we know, for the most part, dreams, you can say, oh, you recall a few dreams you've had, but for the most part, not. Just gone. Upon waking, it vanishes. And there may be an interim state where half in the dream world, half in the wake world. But once one is awakened, the dream state is irrelevant. So the Vedas say, asanga hyam purusha. The soul is never actually polluted or contaminated. But it's forgetful, deluded, subjected to illusion, but it's never actually polluted, contaminated. So Guru Maharaj says a very interesting line. In one place he said, with regard to the plight of the jiva souls, he said, a part of the perfect appears to be imperfect. And that jiva is an impoverished shakti who gets her wealth, the shelter and association of chit shakti, asraya vigraha. Who do what? They say, Udoy means to awaken. Krishna Bhakti, Krishna Prema Nitya Siddha Sadhya Kabunoy, Sravanadi Shuddha Chite Koroye Udoy. It's not that something produces this, but certain things awaken that. You can't awaken something if it doesn't have the potential of being awake. So it means that there's some potential there, lying dormant, in a sense, asleep, and superior association, service, shravanadi, shravanam means shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, etc. Awaken this wonderful potential of jiva. Whereas Saraswati Thakur says, the mind, like an evil guardian, robs jiva of her wealth. That's one of the classic stereotypes in like children's literature, children's stories. what are they called? Children's stories, right? Huh? Fairy tales. It's the evil guardian. You have the cute little kids and the evil guardian who really wants to rob the child of her wealth. But in the name of being guardian. Saraswati Thakur says, that's what the mind is, who we're so friendly with, thinking as ourselves, posting on Facebook. Just kidding. On the level. No, but so that covered self, covered by layers, acquired prejudice, acquired tendencies. Right. The mind, which has a misconceived notion of self that we're identifying with, is an evil guardian, robbing Jiva of her wealth. What is her wealth? Serving potential. And redirecting that serving potential towards exploitation, exploiting tendencies. So how did Prabhupada say it? One place he said, our natural love for Krishna has been converted into a lust for matter. So if anything, on a positive note, we can say, oh, if we see how intense the lust for matter can be, then it's a reflection of the potential of spiritual intensity for dedication, devotion, love and affection. Is there any question relevant to this discussion, or what is the question?
There is one online question, and we usually prioritize them.
Yeah.
Does pleasure exist without pain? Without pain, yeah. Or does love make even pain blissful?
You know, we said, does can you relish food without hunger? Like there's a saying, and I'm just paraphrasing, but something like, hunger is the best spice, that idea. I hear you. So, it's a profound subject. And see, and this, all of this is consistent. So we're saying about negativity, and Jiva's wealth lies in negativity. What is another way of expressing negativity? Want, need, hunger, lolium, it's mentioned. But here we can take lolium as, you know, hunger, that sort of hankering. That will produce the maximum amount of joy or relish, and Srila Gurudev, he liked to draw our attention in this way. He said, in the pastimes of Mahaprabhu, he would say this phrase, what is his tasting matter? And this is the key to understanding something very important. Saying, what is his tasting matter? Now, Krishna, as, what do we hear? We were talking about Mahaprabhu finding Brahma Sangita. And those prayers, the last line, you know, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham. Govinda, who is he? Adipurusha means the original male, the original enjoyer. And we just said, Lakshmi Sahasrasatasam Brahma Sevimanam, which gives you a hint at Krishna's enjoying capacity, right? Unlimited capacity for enjoyment. That Krishna, right, aparam kasyapi pranayi janam brindasu kutuki, observing loving exchange with Srimati Radharani, has awakened in him the curiosity of what it is like to be her, to be in her position, to be in the non-enjoying position, but the enjoyed. Right? And particularly, as Gurudev said, what is his tasting matter is not the pastimes of union, but in separation. He by separating himself from her, he plunged her heart into the depths of separation. And from a hidden position observing that, that aroused this curiosity within him. What it's like to be her, to experience that. But as Kaviraj Goswami says in the Charitamritam, Bahye Vishijalahoy Bhitore Anandamoy Krishna Premier Adbhuta Charit, saying this is very peculiar. Externally, separation, the devastating effects of separation are such that it appears the devotee is the one, the beloved, experiencing that has been poisoned. Even Gabriel Garcia Marquez wrote a book called Love in the Time of Cholera. So cholera has these horrible symptoms. And what his point is that this person who's madly in love with someone, do they have cholera or showing these horrible symptoms, or is it that they're in love? So there's a point to be made there. So Kaviraj Goswami is saying, externally as if they're poisoned, internally, in Guru Maharaj's words, relishing some peculiar sweet nectarine substance. So how are we to understand that? We know, even by a simple analysis, the greatest love stories are they're painful. In music, they have what they call torch songs, and if someone's their heart is on fire, they've been separated from their beloved. The Ramayana is there, Romeo and Juliet. There are so many other stories. And what are they based upon? That the lovers are separated. And this is supposed to be the true test of love, is does it stand in separation? And to what degree? So when there is union, there's one level of heart that's achieved. In separation, a deeper level of heart is achieved. But that is painful. But here, and so what Gurudev said, he said in summary once, and annoyed at some other type of misunderstanding or proposal, he said, even an animal understands the joy of union. He said, but what sort of joy can be experienced in separation? That's another matter. That's beyond animal-like capacity to understand. And that's the tasting matter of Mahaprabhu. What are the two zenith points of his pastimes? Like, it's not incidental or anecdotal that every year he celebrates the Rath Yatra in Jagannath Puri. It's not just they're telling you this because it's a wonderful pastime. It's because it's the zenith point of separation. After 100 years of separation, Radharani and Brajagopis are meeting Krishna from Dwaraka in Kurukshetra. Right? The same Radharani and Brajagopis, what does that say? Who they cannot tolerate the momentary blinking of the eye, that period of separation from Krishna. Anikananam Trutir Yugayate Tamapashyatam Kutila Kundalam Srimukam Jitayat Yada Udikshitam Pakshmakridrasham in the Gopi Gita. They're cursing Brahma. The same divine ladies, they say, the Rasalila were told, lasts for a night of Brahma. Sahasra Yuga Parjantam Ahoryad Brahmanobidu. That means 4,300,000,000 years. It's that night, just the proverbial night, where they say, we wish this night would go on forever, that it would never end. Right? That's expressed in love poetry and love songs. It's a natural expression of the heart. They say, we wish this night would, it's that night that never ends. The night of, you know, romance and dancing and so, you know, and beautiful love. And what do they say? So we're told Yogamaya summoned all these knights together. So it lasts for 4,300,000,000 years because Krishna Leela employs the principle of contraction and expansion of time and space. And what sort of love and affection are they capable of? They say, it was like the blink of an eye. So Gurudev said, no amount of union will ever satisfy the devotee. They'll always be hankering for more. That's the nature of Krishna conception. And encrypted in that is a hopeful message to even us neophyte practitioners that we're not interested in achieving some, you know, final stage, right? But rather, it's, you know, the search for Sri Krishna. Hey Radhe Brajadevi Ke Chalalite Hey Nanda Shunu Kutaha. Where are they? Where is Krishna? Kahan. Korum Kahan Pan Rajananandan. Kahan Krishna Prananath Murali Vidan Kahan Korum Kahan Pan Rajananandan. Mahaprabhu is in the search for Sri Krishna. He's plunging the depths of separation. So they're saying that night, the Brahmaratri was like the blink of an eye in terms of union. But then what do we find? The inverse, contraction, expansion of time and space. The blink of an eye in separation is like a day of Brahma. Now they've taken it in another direction. Intolerable. They're cursing Brahma. You fool, you don't know how to make eyes. Why do they have to blink? Make unblinking eyes. In another place, Radharani is saying, I give it, I have like fish eyes that are just always open. And, you know, lot, you know, unlimited Krishna, no interruption. So those gopis who are capable of that type of sentiment, who dismiss Narayan, right? When Krishna tricks them by showing Narayan, they're saying, Namo Narayan, have you seen Krishna? What audacity do they have, in one sense, to dismiss Narayan? Right, 60 qualities, according to Rupa Goswami. So then they meet in Kurukshetra, and after such a long time of separation, as Guru Maharaj said, they cannot meet in the desired way. So their hearts are expressing some disappointment. Right? That sort of, and those sort of emotions, that is the tasting matter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna already knows more than we can ever imagine everything there is to know about the joy of union. He's Rasaraj. Right? He's ecstasy personified. That's not why he appeared as Mahaprabhu. This is at the heart of the matter of the appearance, the descent of Krishna as Mahaprabhu. He wants to relish these things. Right? Nilam bodhi today sada svaviraha kepam vitam bandhavam. Svaviraha. He's experiencing separation from himself. He's chanting Krishna Nam and tasting its sweetness. When at Kir Chor Gopinath, when they bring the Kir, the pujari, they're offering the kheer to Mahaprabhu. His art as Krishna and Gopinath is an expansion of his art, the bhog was offered to him, he's taken that. That's not why Mahaprabhu is eager to taste this kheer. He's in Bhakta Bhav, and not only Bhakta Bhav, Radha Bhav, Radha Bhava Dyuti Subolita. He wants to take prasadam. Krishna doesn't take prasadam. There's, you know, like news flash. Krishna not taking prasadam. The bhog is, we have, the song is called Bhog Arati. After Krishna tastes the bhog, and with the nectar from the lips of Krishna and his tasting, then it is prasadam. So that is for the devotees to relish. So as the highest devotee, Radharani, Radhabhav, Krishna as her, as Mahaprabhu, wants to taste the prasadam of Gopinath. He's very eager to taste that. This is a different experience than being Gopinath taking the bhog. So what is his tasting matter? And so the 2 points, and what are the 2 points? There, the Rath Yatra. That's where, and Guru Maharaj expressed this formula, that service according to the intensity of its necessity draws remuneration. So the greatest necessity of Radharani of service from her serving group is at that point where separation has reached its zenith point. Service according to the intensity of its necessity draws remuneration. So, and he's celebrating Rath Yatra every year with the devotees. And so we can take it to be 24 years or so. Right. Then, but in the last 12 years, in Jagannath Puri, we're told after he gets released from Advaita Acharya, the mystic poem, and he goes in the fire bed of separation in the Gangbir, where we're told Gita Govinda, Jagannath Balabhanata, Krishna Karanamritam, and the songs of Chandidas and Vidyapati. There, what is he, what is the framework and the, for tasting is, it says, the condition that Radharani was in at the time of the Uddhava Darshan. What does that mean? That means when Krishna sent Uddhava from Mathura Dwarka to assuage the pain in the hearts of the Braja Gopis and being separated from him, it means the Brahma Gita, and where Radharani exhibits this divine madness that is incomprehensible. And Guru Maharaj's godbrother said, it's his specialty. And I once asked Guru Maharaj as the final days were apparent, that I said, you once, you know, I told Guru Maharaj, he said he would once explain this. And then, and I thought, this might be the last chance, and by saying some peripheral things, like, oh, you said, although you settled upon Chaitanya Saraswati, Navadvip, for your final days, you had considered before that the Gangbir and before that Uddhav Kyari. And Guru Maharaj is thinking, oh, yes, he's thinking about Uddhav Kyari. That's where the Brahma Gita is spoken. And now that his mind was there, I'm saying, you once told me you would express this. And Guru Maharaj started speaking. And although I'm accompanied, accustomed to extensively hearing him speak and parsing what he says and trying to understand it the best I can, this was non, to use the word of his, non-understandable. Fragments of divine feelings and emotions, just so extraordinary that I just kind of wanted to, like, okay. And it automatically, he stopped after a while. But that's the other point. So Rath Yatra and the Brahmar Gita. And ostensibly, this is this pain of separation is there, but it is plunging a greater depth of heart. But though these are very high and wonderful and inconceivable things, but nonetheless, Mahaprabhu came, and this is how is this known to us? By Swarup Damodar, Raghunath Das Goswami, through Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Charitamritam. Otherwise, it would not be known, or only known to that inner circle. Hare Krishna.